Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You are listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast and all our social media platforms. Follow us on the Facebook page as well as Instagram and Snapchat. Also, hit the website, highspotpodcast.com, and also our partnership with B Plus Player Radio Network. Thank you so much, Mark Adam Haggerty. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin alongside the Trendsetter. So much to recap. We got No Mercy coming on. We got Gabby Ortiz, who's got an amazing female wrestler who's actually got an article written about her. By day, she's the mayor's receptionist, and by night, she is a pro wrestling goddess. She will join us on the show. But first and foremost, Trendsetter, how you doing, bud? How's everything going?
Well, I feel better than what I sound like, Jeff.
That's
the one
thing.
I sound too sweet. You know, I can't even do it now. My voice is shot for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's all the screaming I was doing.
It's the seasonal change.
Not even that, folks. You know, Jeff and I, we work in different places. And, you know, I work in a lot of places that have a lot of electronics. And as we all know, electronics, they
germs.
No, not germs, but they like to collect dust. And we're in a very dusty place. Not here in Studio
51. Well, my office is pretty dusty too, so I mean, yeah. I can join the club right there. But
exactly, but I think it just caught the best of me.
Okay, hopefully it caught the best of you, but it doesn't, you know, fall on me. So, you know, just keep away.
Oh, believe me, but I always keep away from you. I don't even sit next to you until we're actually doing the show.
I'm saying listen all the time. So every time I say listen, please punch me in the face. And I think Gabby wanted to punch me in the face when I said listen too much. But if I do that, you have all the right to reach over here.
Don't
and
do that.
Give me a...
Because you know I will do it. But I think my voice sounds very deep and sexy right
now. How was your weekend, bud?
It was good. Pretty busy. But again, I was looking forward to No Mercy to see this huge main event. I mean, we're talking about who is going for the face of WWE. It was going to be Roman Reigns, John Cena, the passing of the torch, supposedly, and then the main event of all main events, the WrestleMania-worthy main event. I mean, both of them were Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar. I like to say didn't live up to par my expectations, but
why,
still.
Why? Because honestly, before we even, Saturday or Friday when we finished up the show, we were kind of excited because you had two marquee matches in Los Angeles, No Mercy. Everyone said these were WrestleMania-worthy matches.
They were.
And leading into Sunday, you were thinking, okay, I'm going to sit down after a long day, going to, you know, order some pizza, going to watch this. And this is one that we weren't like, oh, we'll catch it on Monday or we'll catch it during the week because, you know, it's that kind of pay-per-view. So we're excited about it. And then I think I have the same opinion that you do. I think that the show kind of was like, I was expecting the two main events to be the show, but obviously it was the women's title match and the tag team title match that kind of, for me, saved the show because going into it, I was crossing my fingers that Braun and Brock would deliver. But I got to say, perfect, you know, word that you used was underwhelm. And why do you think it underwhelmed?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly what was the cause if we're talking about the main event, Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar. It's very easy for us to go out there and everybody's gonna be like, oh, you're typical fans, you're nitpicking everything, and you're never satisfied. It has nothing to do with that. I just feel sometimes in life, Jeff, when things have so much high expectations that you're either going to live up to the standards or not. And I just had this feeling that depending on how they wanted to execute it, because the whole time we were talking about how do you protect Braun Strowman because of the humongous momentum he's been doing at this very stage. The only bad booking we could probably say is his clean loss to Roman Reigns not too long ago. With Brock Lesnar, what do you do with him right now? He seems not to be as invincible as he once was. What I was worried about is that I felt the ending was going to be more of, it was going to be a mishmash of, they didn't know what they really wanted to do, so we're just going to put this out there, and that's going to be the finish. That's what it felt like. You know, you had a lot of anticipation. The crowd was really into it. They wanted to see this event. They were chanting, cheering. You couldn't have had a hotter crowd. The downfall was that Braun Strowman, again, dominated Brock Lesnar, and he put him through about maybe three body slams, and then having Brock Lesnar finish off Braun Strowman with one F5, and that was it. It was kind of a anticlimactic type of ending.
Especially since Braun's being pushed like crazy, and he was taking, you know, for example, Roman Reigns, when you go back to Great Balls of Fire, and he's surviving it.
Can I punch you in the face for just saying that?
No, no, no. Only if I said listen, which I have not said.
You just did right now.
Well, that was just an example.
Okay. Jeez.
you still miffed about Great Balls of Fire, which I'll stop. But he takes, you know, the ambulance smashing, almost getting killed by Roman Reigns, survives that. You know, you have to, it takes everything to beat him, and then he's going to lose to 1F5. You're like, wow. I just thought that it didn't erase all the build that you have for Braun, but it kind of leaves you wondering, man, so how much more does Braun have to get? I mean, we're talking coming off of SummerSlam where he annihilated Brock Lesnar and he couldn't get the job done at No Mercy. So it kind of leaves me wondering, you know, man, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth of the way Braun Strowman lost.
I mean, I would love to debate anybody who thought this match lived up to his expectations. I'm sure if you dissect it every little bit, maybe you'll find a little positive there. But again, it isn't necessarily that I'm upset with the finish, but I'm not even upset. I'm just kind of a little disappointed in the way it was finished by this explanation I'm going to give you here. We talk so much about, and I think this has now become part of wrestling psychology, I feel, unfortunately, Jeff, is that you see huge finishers. These are marquee moves by talent, which basically indicates the end of the match. The person can't go in. It's over. And we have finish after finish after finisher being kicked out of. So when you see 1F5 against a guy like Braun Strowman, who, like you explained before, went through all those issues with, you know, being driven through the ambulance and all that stuff and gets beaten that way, that should be enough for us to say, oh, wow, he beat him with the F5. But now it's to the point that you can't finish him off with just one F5. You can't finish off anybody with just one F5. It has to be 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And maybe that's just maybe the dilemma we're dealing now in professional wrestling, that's the norm now. The norm now is when you hit somebody with the finisher, they're automatically going to kick out strong.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way they sold Braun once Brock put him in the submission maneuver, but the guillotine. But I was like, okay, I would much rather have him sell that and then take steel chairs. For example, make it a no DQ match where Brock Lesnar has to do everything but, you know, to beat Braun Strowman. That would have been, you know, more believable. It would have shown, hey, you know.
Or I thought Brock was going to get disqualified. That's a perfect way of saving him and Braun Strowman.
But
he
listen,
didn't win clean.
Oh, there you go. You punched me in the face. I said it, but you missed it. This all sets up
another opportunity.
This all sets up the inevitable.
Yeah.
That at WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans, they will, you know, have the culmination of the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns feud, and it will lead to Roman Reigns holding up the Universal title in front of all of us, and that will create a huge push for the Big Dog. And Big Dog had a sort of passing the torch moment with John Cena in their match. And here's another match where, you know, the first thing me and you said was, you know, these two guys, their form of wrestling, it is a little bit of it is tedious, and it also can lead to a slow match, but because they don't have that dance partner, a la AJ Styles. So this match kind of was a little bit tedious, a little bit of slow, but also Roman Reigns gave John Cena a little bit of taste of his medicine, and John Cena got Super Reigns. So, after all these FUs, after all these attitude adjustments, Roman Reigns comes out on top in what we all thought passed the John Cena passed the torch to Roman Reigns. Your thoughts on the match?
I don't really feel it was a passing of the torch, because in my honest opinion, I think the torch, or whatever they want to call it, brass ring, had already been passed.
By Taker?
Not necessarily by Taker, but I think that's just the direction you knew or know that the company's going in. Taker was obviously getting older. John Cena was not around as often as he once was, and post-match mentioned how he probably just can't do it the same way he once did it before, so his role has changed. So I think all that was coming. What you saw in the match, in my opinion, is the same thing you saw at the end of the conclusion of Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman. If they accomplished anything in that main event and accomplished anything here, was they made Roman Reigns look strong, they made Braun Strowman look strong, and they made a guy like Brock Lesnar look... He didn't look invincible anymore. And so maybe that's building up towards Roman Reigns, because now Roman Reigns is gaining all this momentum. He seems now to be the invincible one. This is his yard. And John Cena, and you know, this goes back to what you're saying. These two are, in my opinion, not ring generals, meaning that, you know, it depends on who they're with to make the match good. Now, you think with John Cena, all his experience, and we know he's not a great wrestler. He never had to be a great wrestler because the amount of the type of talent he had in the ring with him surpassed that, or how he sold a match would surpass whatever result you got in the ring. There weren't all five-star matches. With a guy like Roman Reigns, I thought this was more of a challenge for him because if anybody needed to make this a great match, it was going to be Roman Reigns. The pressure's on him to, believe it or not, carry John Cena. And with John Cena overselling, it just kind of looked wishy-washy. It looked more comedical to me than anything. But it accomplished its goal in terms of passing of the torch. I think that happened a long time ago, although John Cena, you know, his biggest attribute has always been his mic skills and still is to this day. But I think Roman Reigns, without a question, is now, quote-unquote, using the pun, the guy now, and it's all set up towards WrestleMania. So it accomplished two things: Roman Reigns being dominant, John Cena moving aside, and now Brock Lesnar not being as indestructible. He's now kind of, you see his expressions after each match, he's like, whew, I kind of barely got away with that one. And that's what you need now as you're building up towards this.
But still, Brock is strong because he beats Braun Strowman, probably the best push guy in the WWE in the last 6 months. Yeah. So, you know, it's inevitable. We're going to get Brock Lesnar and
Roman Reigns.
So, John Cena, after that on Raw Talk, reflecting, and also the whole week before on the Edge and Christian podcast, he kind of, you know, put the locker room on notice, talked about superstars, talked about, you know, I guess in a way, talking about that brass ring, talking about complacency in the locker room. Also, you know, hyping up Roman Reigns, talking about how he thinks this feud has really helped him and he's seen another side of Roman Reigns. So have we seen another side of Roman Reigns? Will he be better coming out of the No Mercy? And also, do you think that the John Cena that we got, the reflection John Cena on Raw Talk, do you think that's John Cena where he's going to, you know, maybe tone it down and maybe he doesn't have that many more years left to wrestle full time?
Well, yeah, he'll never wrestle full time ever again, in my opinion. I mean, he'll never do that. That we are way beyond that point. Will he come back? Yes, but I think it'll be more now special moments. I think he finds himself, John Cena, he doesn't have the crossover appeal right now, at least, like The Rock has, where I think John Cena...
He's getting there,
and I think that's the next step for him in his career. He's now 40 years old. But I think, in like what you talked about, that reflection and him going back of, you know, that arena he was at was the first time he won a championship. He was in the crowd. Got a little emotional there. I think he knows now in this stage of his life he's not going back full-time, and he will be back. Like you said, he's not done. But now it will be very sporadic. It will be for those special moments, like when he does come back. And who knows, even at this stage, even losing to Roman Reigns, he still has the caliber enough to compete for a championship. And like you said, they're saving that record-breaking world title run one more time for John Cena.
I'm kind of wondering if it, now that he's part-time, I wonder if it just stays at 16. I wonder if
we've seen part-timers before. We've seen The Rock win the title from CM Punk, who is a more deserving champion than The Rock at that
time. I just wonder
if
John Cena just values that Ric Flair record, that he's like, all right, suffice to just tie it.
I'm pretty sure
content.
He does.
How can I not freaking know the word content?
I'm pretty sure he does, but at the same time, it depends on what the company wants. If the company wants now John Cena to be the new record holder for years to come, you know, for example, I hate to jump way ahead in the future, Jeff, but 20, 30 years from now, when we're old men, you know, people maybe won't remember Ric Flair that much anymore. He'll always be a name in the business, but maybe they'll be like, John Cena's record.
Of course,
now.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way they're trying to play, the key they're trying to play.
And, for example, so we all know that, okay, so John Cena's going to take the time off, and is Roman Reigns better for this rivalry than he was before?
He was better for it in terms of his performance. His promos weren't good, but again, he showed the other side of you that, you know, he actually had some passion. Don't mind me saying this, but he had some balls finally. He was coming out and saying what was on his mind as you know, cookie cutter as he could be. But the thing is, when you look at that, and John Cena has mentioned this on podcasts before, he pushes talent, as much as people want to say he buries people, he pushes talent to a new level, like AJ Styles. And it took that experience for AJ Styles now to be in the situation he is right now. Now it's up to Roman Reigns to take this, because he's not facing John Cena anymore. If he faces The Miz, whoever in the roster, he has to be up to that same level of intensity. He had the opportunity on Raw, in my opinion, he kind of failed at it.
All right, we're going to get to that, but real quick, okay. I just want to say that I don't know if it was at SummerSlam or even a little bit before that, I have a new appreciation for John Cena. I think you get so used to booing the guy and, you know, saying, oh, John Cena sucks. And then everyone's saying, you know, let's go Cena, you know, and me and you were on the, you know, Cena sucks thing, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you see him tap on the LED before he leaves, and when you see him tear up, you know, put the Total Divas and the, you know, and the Total Bellas aside, put all that, Nicole, you know, whatever, in the corner, Nicole. I just have so much admiration for the man. And it's weird. Now part of me is going to, you know, miss him. I don't know if my childhood, or I don't know if my, not my childhood, but I don't know if my, part of my term was like rooting against the guy. But now when he's not going to be there full time, I'm going to miss him. So it's kind of weird. But I have a whole new admiration and respect for John Cena.
See, I don't agree with at least your last assessment there.
When would you agree with me?
Because here's, and I never agree with you. I'm just waiting for you to say, so listen this, so one more time.
Show
so I can
quality.
Punch you in the face. But yeah, the main word I think we'll universally agree on is that he has respect. We've come on this show, even we've talked about John Cena late in his career. God forbid we spoke about him like when he was the main guy and he was the top star. It's the despising the character of John Cena more than the man. The man himself is a stand-up guy. We've seen specials on YouTube where fans have thanked him for his whole belief of never give up, and that was very emotional. It shows you the kind of stand up guy John Cena is. So I'll never disrespect the man John Cena. It's just the character. I don't like the character he portrays. I don't like it. I think it's cookie cutter. It's cliche. I don't like it. That being said, he has all my respect. He's a bona fide Hall of Famer. If the Hall of Fame means anything to people. But the thing is, I don't think it's going to be a very difficult transition. And here's the thing. Here's the reason why. Look at Chris Jericho, for example. I know I always talk about Chris Jericho on the show, right? But here's the thing. He went from being a full-timer all the time to sporadically coming back and leaving, sporadically coming back and leaving. And now I feel that's kind of the new norm, especially for superstars to get older and now do become part-timers. We've seen that with Undertaker. Undertaker only wrestled once a year. So although we found the finality of Undertaker at WrestleMania 33, if it is the final match, I think it's going to be easier to transition away from
Cena. With time that happens.
It's not going to be as difficult. It's not like, for example, he was Stone Cold Steve Austin. He was in it the entire time, and then one match, he's done with The Rock, and then you never see him again.
See, with Steve Austin, it's different because, yeah, exactly. With Steve and Sean, we don't see them that much again, and we always ask them, one more match, and they both don't want to come back.
We'll see John again.
Yeah, but again, it's, I mean, and I got to say one thing. Transition is beautiful because, you know, in professional sports, it's kind of hard for that athlete to step aside because they want to play forever. In wrestling, it's like a unwritten rule, sort of like, you know, you pass a torch, you do the business. And
doing the honors, basically.
Doing the honors. So it's something interesting to see. I mean, like, it was perfect when they showed The Rock, you know, saluting Cena, and then Cena now saluting Roman Reigns, you know. So a new chapter begins in WWE where now Roman Reigns is now the big dog. I think you're saying the circle of life, right? I guess.
No, I was just genuflecting it. It all goes full circle all the time.
So going to Raw, and one of the pet peeves I have about Roman Reigns is now, you know, he opens up against The Miz. I don't like when he gets thuggish. And I'm not trying to insult anybody, but it is a type of talking which, you know, me and you have sometimes, maybe more have I gotten caught when you're in a, you know, with different groups or anything like that. But that whole y'all and the yo, you know, whatever. Roman Reigns, just be yourself when you're talking to The Miz. Because once I heard that y'all, you know what I'm saying? Once he got Uso-like, then I was like, okay, now we're back to just going resorting back to what you learned. And yeah. I thought he regressed on Monday night.
He did regress, in my opinion. Now, I wouldn't say talk like you normally talk because we've seen him speak before and he's made gestures and jokes. And, you know, his speech, you know, is what it is. I just don't appreciate the fact that when Roman Reigns goes out there and he tries to be funny for the sake of being funny. You're not John Cena. You're not a comedic styles like CM Punk or Chris Jericho. Stick with what you know. Stick to the point. When he goes out there and tries to be comedical, that's when people resent him even more.
I think he can talk to the audience, but not by asking a question. Make more of a statement. Like, instead of saying, didn't I beat this guy last week? You're enticing the man. Just say, didn't I beat a guy like you last? You know what I mean? Like, you're making a statement, yeah, but you're talking to the guy. So I think it's not more of the speech, and I think it's more of the tone. And I just hope that, again, I think he did come off better after the Cena feud, and hopefully he doesn't fall back to that. Oh, y'all, you know, what you want? You know, didn't I beat your ass? That, to me, is not something that a guy who's at his level should be, doing.
No, I don't harp so much on the way he says things, and it's the manner in which he says it. When you try to be funny or comedical, or try to set a certain tone when the moment doesn't adhere to that, that's bad. And, you know, Roman Reigns has been here long enough, and you know, it's easy for me to nitpick because I'm not in that situation, but you've been here long enough. You've done this long enough, Roman. You should know when certain attributes and characteristics and mannerisms work in certain settings. The fact that he doesn't know that, or he's doing that maybe deliberately because he's just trying to now think he can do it, to me, that's what upsets me. And that's what ultimately will make, if he keeps continually doing this, this rivalry and this whole thing he did with John Cena, completely meaningless, in my opinion.
Raw was in Ontario, Canada. No, not Ontario, Canada, actually. Ontario, California.
California,
so
yeah,
I,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The funny thing? I was looking at the map, and I was like, wait a minute. How are you going to go from Staples Center in California and then Ontario? I didn't even know there's a freaking Ontario, California, but they were in Ontario, California.
Yeah.
And Roman Reigns, obviously the tease now was on the, you know, Miz TV, and the tease now is that there's going to be a Shield reunion. Do you think it's wise? You think it's desperation at the WWE that, you know, after 5 years, is it 5 years since the Shield?
Yeah, I think so, 5 years.
Damn. Wow, it just feels like, you know, yesterday that Seth Rollins took the chair and hit the Roman Reigns on the back of the, you know, on the back. It was crazy.
Sweet moment.
Do you think that it's too soon in A? Do you think it smells desperation from the WWE?
I wouldn't say it's too soon because after 5 or 6 years, yeah, it's always good. I mean, we've seen DX reunions. We've seen stuff like that, NWO reunions. I just think it's the wrong place at the wrong time.
How about the wrong three guys in the Miztourage?
Yeah, you could say that too, but, you know.
Does it remind you of anything?
The Miztourage?
Yeah, when you're bringing a group or a tag team or a six-man back, it's kind of, does it remind you of kind of Rock and Cena for the first time tag teaming against Miz and R-Truth? That kind of, you've got the Shield going up against Miz and, I mean, taking nothing away from Axel and Dallas, but, you know, these guys, you know, just recently have been main eventing and not, yeah. You know, maybe this is something down the road that they were planning and now this is the time to do it.
I think when you talk about Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, I mean, they haven't really been given the opportunity. Give them the opportunity. You know, I would love to see him as a tag team going for the tag team championship. Yeah. God knows that tag team division needs some depth. But when it comes to are they the right three? Well, couldn't we have said that the same thing like when we're enjoying the Bray Wyatt, the Wyatt family versus the Shield? And those matches were amazing. What's left for the Shield? And then you bring back Evolution? You bring back Evolution really just for that storyline, which it kind of worked, but at the same time kind of feel like it was overplayed. Like that was like their last resort to kind of do this angle. That's what it feels like here, but I think really what they're doing it for is because, I mean, we heard Roman Reigns make his claim that he's going after Brock Lesnar. Now, from this point on to WrestleMania, and I'm not talking about WrestleMania now, Jeff, but it's a long ways off. If that's going to be a WrestleMania match, there needs to be something Roman Reigns has to do other than that. If he's already claiming the title, what else are you going to do? So I think they're doing it more for this purpose. You have Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose as tag team champions.
Great match, by the way, at No Mercy.
Great match, stole the show, kind of improved the tag team division or kind of set the bar
now. Cesaro, no pun intended. Cesaro did not lose his teeth. He ended up getting them shoved up his gums.
That's even worse. I thought he broke his teeth. The fact that he got shoved up his gums, and that's just terrible.
Aren't tough guys. You want to say this is fake? You guys want to not call these guys, you know, true men? I mean, these guys.
And that was early in the match too, The match went on for almost 40 minutes. So that's a huge testament to the intestinal fortitude that a guy like Cesaro has. But just going back to that, I just think right now the WWE just, that's their only other option right now because they can't think of anything else to do with Roman Reigns at this point. So let's keep him busy and preoccupied. Let's have a Shield reunion. Timing is right.
Can't go wrong.
But situationally wise, I would have saved it for something else.
And there's the thing, saved it for something else. It seems like it's a phrase that we talk about a lot, especially this year. Oh, save it for WrestleMania. It's a WrestleMania moment. Or save it for Survivor Series. I've noticed in the wrestling business now, everything's save it for. And where it's, for example,
not currently. Look at the pay-per-views you've been seeing now. You've been seeing WrestleMania quality type matches, and they're not being saved for later on. We're getting it now.
The funny thing is, it's kind of, but the real, not the real wrestling fan, but it's like more like traditionalist will say save it for WrestleMania. Those ones that, like, you know, are so thinking that WrestleMania is the end all be all, right? But it's not anymore as far as, like, you know, now they're pushing Royal Rumble, pushing Survivor Series. Everything is the most important pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But in a world where it's instant gratification, the wrestling fan, the true wrestling fan is like, save it.
Yeah, they're saying save. I think they're, you know,
I don't mind.
Let me just clarify. I'm not saying saving it for WrestleMania. I'm saying, like, the point you just made, you know, with Bo Dallas, The Miz, and Curtis Axel. I'm saying save it because if you want to establish these two other individuals, Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, it could be so much more. You know, who's to say that Roman Reigns can't continue a rivalry with Samoa Joe? And who knows how healthy Samoa Joe is? But why can't he have another rivalry somewhere else and doesn't have to be immediately in the title picture?
No, definitely agree.
That's what I'm saying.
Besides the whole tease the Shield reunion and, of course, The Miz and Mr. Raj getting the best of Roman Reigns in the main event, what else stood out for you on Raw?
What I love the most about Raw was basically the fact that you know, Alexa Bliss, who retained her title at No Mercy towards the end.
Shout out to Nia Jax, who was also a star there.
Oh, to all the women, not just Nia Jax. To all of Sasha, Bayley, and Emma. You know, shout out to all of them. But the mere fact that she came out and basically after that, you know, during Raw Talk, insulted Mickey James as when they actually suggested her as a competitor, saying that she's old, you know, she's over the hill type of thing. Mickey James coming out and finally us getting, or at least me getting, I don't know about you, Jeff, the Mickey James I've been wanting to hear this time since her return.
Underused.
Going on the microphone, stating her claim, knowing and notifying what she's done, although we all know what it is. She is one of the cornerstones of this women's division because she's probably one of the pioneers as well for the women's division as it went through this whole transitional phase to this point on. And Mickey James, not only did she look gorgeous on Raw, but hitting Alexa Bliss with these jabs that, you know, for the longest time, Alexa Bliss has been the only one kind of, you know, stoning people on the microphone.
I mean, and Mickey James just showed that she's better than Bayley on the mic. You know, obviously, you know.
Doesn't take much to be better than Bayley on the mic. I'm sorry.
So Mickey James was quick. She was witty. And obviously, she can still back it up in the ring. And hey, why not go with a pay-per-view match between Mickey James and Alexa Bliss? Make it fresh, you know. Let's have something new. And you know what?
She looks gorgeous in that.
Beautiful,
in that.
Like fine wine Mickey James, right? But honestly, Mickey James can still go.
Yeah, she's a lot more to offer here.
Exactly.
And if you want to build up Alexa Bliss to even make her more legitimate, a rivalry with Mickey James and what Mickey James could do for Alexa's career, there's no question that's what you should be doing until everybody waits for Asuka to make her debut.
Mickey James reinforced what everyone knows, that Mickey James is awesome, that she's a Hall of Famer, that she is one of the best female wrestlers out there and still is, never has lost anything. Yeah. So I hope they do something with Mickey James and Alexa Bliss, even if it is to, you know, make Alexa Bliss even more, even to give her more credibility. And also, too, you got to give it up for Alexa Bliss and her facial reactions. That's why she's on top. That's why she's the women's champion.
Oh, yeah, that training bra, little remark she gave, amazing reaction by
Alexa
Bliss.
That's why she is where she's at. That's why they took the belt off Sasha Banks after SummerSlam. That's why Alexa Bliss is where she's at, because she is a step ahead of everyone else when it comes to that charisma and that facial expression. So that was a highlight.
Yeah.
And again, I also want to give credit to Nia Jax because she was amazing the night before.
Okay. But as much as I have a man crush on Chris Jericho, you have a huge crush on Nia Jax.
Just give her credit because a lot of people saying that she was green, and I think she's kind of, you know, shut a lot of people up.
I was one of those people, but I don't think a lot of people are saying that nowadays.
No. Finn Balor could be the...
Fergal.
I call him Finn, you call him Fergal. Mm-hmm. Could be the next stepping stone for Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Is he a stepping stone for Brock Lesnar?
Unfortunately, yeah, I think so. Ultimately, they want him to get back in the Universal title picture. At this point, the fact that they're not going to put Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar together yet, so it just makes perfect sense that that's what you're going to do. Unfortunately for Finn, he'll get his moment in the sun to be in the main event picture, but at this point right now, I don't see him, from what you hear of people talking in the back, how they just don't feel he's believable because of his size, which I think is complete understatement. I mean, he had Daniel Bryan do the exact same thing. But like you've mentioned before, Jeff, this is the land of the giants. And if you're in the land of the giants on Raw, Finn Balor, this ain't no David versus Goliath thing. I don't know if he'll survive in this type of environment.
So it will be interesting to see Brock Lesnar going from Braun Strowman to Finn Balor. So we will see what happens in the future for Finn. But now, you're talking about the land of the giants, someone who's not and is actually 5 feet of fury and is our 5 feet of fury here on the High Spot Podcast.
She's a giant in my mind,
is Gabby Ortiz, who, you know, a great article was written about her on Philly.com.
Sky's the limit for her.
Sky's the limit. By day, she is the mayor's receptionist from Philadelphia, and by night she is a pro wrestling guy. So once I looked at the article, I knew we had to have her on. We talk about her future, we talk about her Japanese excursion at such a young age, and just what is her future in this business and who she looks up to. So without further ado, here is Gabby Ortiz on the High Spot Podcast. All right, Brian, our next guest is Gabby Ortiz. You know, I saw this article on her, and I was like, we have to have her on. And she is, without a doubt, an up-and-coming wrestler. And we're going to add a little bit of Latin spice to the show. So Gabby Ortiz, by day, she's the mayor's receptionist. By night, she's a pro wrestling goddess.
She's Batgirl.
We're talking to the goddess right now. Gabby, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, very good. First and foremost, just want to send out our wishes to everyone in Puerto Rico with Hurricane Maria. First and foremost, do you have any family there? Are they okay? How's that been to deal with?
There.
You do?
I have an uncle who lives out there. He's a roofer. He's doing okay. He has his own generator, so he's doing all right. And he went to go check up on some family members that live close by. They're doing okay. They're not doing as well, but they're doing all right. And hopefully we can get them here as soon as possible. That's kind of our main goal, is just to get them to the mainland, to Philly or to Florida, while Puerto Rico gets rebuilt. And it's kind of, we just want to make sure they're safe and have everything that they need, because they're older. So,
yeah,
you know, it must be difficult. It would be difficult for anybody, but just this probably just... it makes it even that much more difficult. So
no, very, very, very true. There, we're glad that everybody was safe there, and hopefully they get back to the States as soon as possible. Now, speaking of this article that Jeff had mentioned to me, he showed it to me. I thought it was really interesting. Great piece of writing. Where did it all start? How were you reached to do this article?
My Vaughn Johnson he's a well-known journalist for Philly.com, especially for their Squared Circle section, which is about pro wrestling, which is super cool. And my boyfriend, LSG, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a great guy.
Let me take your word for that.
Right? Yeah, I'll take your word for that. He has to be a good guy.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. And he actually tweeted at him while I was in Japan, saying like, oh, I think this would be like a really good story for you to do. She's, she's Philly born and bred. Hit her up. And then he did. I had to wait till I came back, though, because I needed to talk to the press secretary for my office and make sure that it was cool that I did it, because working for the government, you can't really speak to the press without permission from the person who does the press, who runs all of that. So I had to ask her and make sure that it was cool and everything was great, and she let me do it. So I was able to do it.
So talk about your job.
He was interested the moment he saw it. He was like, I have to get this story.
Oh, hell yeah.
He has to.
I mean, it is quite the read, and I suggest everyone take a look and read it. It is a very interesting article. So, Gabby, talk about like how this process happened about getting the job with the mayor of Philadelphia. So, you know...
We
had somebody on before, and she had a full time job, and you know, for an insurance company. But now you're actually working with the mayor. So, you know, how does that come about? Are they supportive? And just exactly how are their feelings of knowing that someone that works with them is actually a pro wrestler by night?
Well, I've been upfront with them from the beginning when I got vetted for the position to make sure that I wasn't a crazy person. Which they totally missed that, because I definitely am. They saw that I did that because I was doing it before I got my job. And they were kind of like, it's interesting. And I'm like, it won't conflict because I do everything at nights and on weekends.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, okay, so I guess that's fine. they really couldn't say no, because it's something I do outside of office hours. So I was completely qualified for the job. I had known the mayor, Jim Penny, for a really long time. I helped him do fundraising events at the nightclub I used to work at. I used to work at this club called Woody's here in Philly. It is a gay club. It's very fun. If you guys are ever out here, I'll take you. I still get free drinks out there. It's a good
All right.
time.
Awesome. First rounds on Gabby. I like it.
And then he was just like, wow, you're doing so well since I've known you since you were a kid. And he said, I would really like it if you worked for the administration. And I was like, I mean, that sounds like a good plan. It's you're more engaged with the city and you're more engaged with the people and constituents more so than I was kind of engaged with a smaller community in Philadelphia, more actively engaged. And now I have a broader reach to everybody in the city. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think what's really cool, Gabby, about the whole situation, too, is that you talked about it in the article. I just think it's always cool. Like, you know, Jeff and I, we love doing this podcast, but also we have other things that we do. You know, we got to make money somehow, right? And so from the training to wrestling to doing your job as a receptionist for the mayor, how do you find a way of balancing everything? I know you mentioned the article. She wants it all.
So she's going to balance everything.
So how's that going for you? Is it as stressful as you thought it was going to be, or are you're keeping an even keel right now?
It's going. No, it's not.
You're so convincing, Gabby. You really are right now.
No, I do like what I do, both aspects of my life. So if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. That's super cliche, and I hate cliches, but it's really true. Like, the worst part is getting up in the morning, and then the rest of it's easy. So that's how I look at it. It's like, okay, I gotta get out of bed, and I won't be going to bed to probably like 2-3 a.m. tonight. That's okay, because I get to a job that's really cool, and then I get to do another job that's really cool, my pro wrestling, because I train, you know, almost 4 nights a week. So it's totally fine. People are like, that seems like it's so stressful, and it's really not. It's just like, you do it and you get it done, and you're better for it every single day. So
is it easy?
That's how
to
I
say
look at it. That's how I live by it. It does get hard, though. I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes it's like, oh, I want to sleep today. I just want to chill, but you know, no rest for me. Not
no
yet.
Excuses for you. Exactly.
Gotta make that money first.
Talking to Gabby Ortiz, Gabby. So the one thing we ask a lot of people getting in the business, and because you're so young at this and you make me and Brian feel old.
So young, 22 years old.
22. And man, God, you know, I wish I see 22 like a long time ago for me, man.
Well, it was a long time ago for you, Jeff.
Yeah. So, but looking back though, where did you get that passion, that itch? Yeah. That itch that you were like, man, this is what I want to do. Was it, a show, was a certain match, was a certain wrestler? What exactly got you to want to do this right now, where you're actually balancing two jobs? What made you love this thing?
Well, I was 19 years old when I was like, this is what I want to do.
A long time ago.
I totally want to do this. It was later in my life. I know most people that I work with, they're like, I knew I wanted to do this when I was an infant. I'm like, oh, cool. Different story here. I was older, and I was kind of out of that mindset where, you know, you can't do it, you know, beating myself up. I grew up, and I was like, wait, I can do whatever I want. And the moment that I decided, yes, this is it, was I went to a Seth Rollins meet and greet. And I was in line with all the people who were there to meet him. They were super excited. I was also excited, but I looked around and I'm like, man, I felt different than the people around me. And I said, you know, I think I actually need to go for this. And the next meet and greet that I need to go to is my own. I need to be meeting my fans. So I contacted Danny Cage from the Monster Factory. And I was training like a week later at the Monster Factory. So it was kind of a weird moment. And it's like, people hear it and they're like, that's strange. But I don't think it's strange, because it was my aha moment. And I'm really happy that happened for me, because now I'm doing really cool things with my life. So
yeah, definitely really cool things with your life, Gabby. We really appreciate it. I mean, it always comes from that story that you're a fan growing up, and then there's that one pinnacle moment, which a lot of people can't figure out or really specify, but you can, that you just felt different. So that's really cool. When it came to training, I mean, you said you contacted the Monster Factory and you wanted to go train immediately. What was it like taking that first bump? Was it also a vindication to you when you took that first bump? Like, yes, this hurts as hell, but I want to do this. Was it like that?
I was really bad at bumping for the first little bit. So the first bump I actually took was a hip toss from Bill Wiles of ECW fame. He gave me a hip toss. And I was like, okay, that wasn't so bad. The next day was a different story. I could not walk. I was like, oh my God, what am I getting into? And I already committed to it. I put down my, you know, my base tuition. There's no turning back after that. But it felt good though. I was like, oh wait, like I can bump. I can do this. This isn't as crazy as I thought it was going to be. It's gotten crazier since then. But prior to that, I was like, okay, this might not be as hard as I thought it was. I was a little wrong, but that's okay.
So would you say it was love at first bump then?
Yeah.
See, they all see that the true people will have that little you know, doubt. But then they'll be, no, it was so worth it. So
it's totally worth it. Every bump is worth it.
So you walk into the Monster Factory and you go in there and you tell them I want to do this. And you're 5 feet of fury, which we love.
Mm-hmm.
And anything from the trainers where they were saying, oh, man, she's going to be, you know, out of
she's
here.
Not gonna last.
Yeah. Or did they know right away that you were going to last?
I don't think they had any idea. At first, I remember Danny Cage being a little bit reluctant in having me there. We actually had a meeting, him, me, and my dad, because my dad's the one that wanted, he wanted to go with me to make sure everything was legit, make sure I wasn't getting like scammed or anything. And we all sat down and had a meeting, and he goes, you're really small, but I can make this work. Like, we can make this work. As long as you're willing to do it and as long as you're willing to learn and you're coachable, that's all that matters. You know, I can teach you all the moves but if you're professional and you're coachable, then I can work with you. And I ended up being professional and coachable. So that's why I'm still there. That's why I have a really good relationship. And this is almost 2 years later. So he was reluctant at first because of my size. And then I think he realized, like, he's the man. So he's like, I can train this person.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and taking nothing away from you, Gabby. I mean, you're tough as nails to get in this business. Jeff and I have so much respect for it. But again, the physicality is there. You know, it's not ballet. Yeah. It's not something that everybody can do. So when we do talk to people that can do it, oh my goodness, it's just the stuff you guys have to put your body through. Now, taking that aside for the fact that, yeah, wrestling moves, holds can be taught. A lot of it's all about psychology too. And Jeff and I always talk about the show. When we're talking about independent wrestling, we're talking about Ring of Honor, we're talking about New Japan, we're talking about WWE, it's always about the characters there. Where would you say your character development is? Because I'm always of the belief, too, that the best characters are extensions of yourself with the volume turned up really high. Where would you say you're in the path right now? I know you're 22 years old, you got, you know, a lot of time to develop it, but where do you feel you are in terms of becoming a character, a personality?
I was an actor to being a wrestler. So I made sure that every character I was given in a script was an extension of myself. So I'm familiar with that. I'm familiar with taking something that you might not relate to at all and figuring out how to relate to it. At the moment, I'm taking a lot of who I am and what I'm putting it into my character and upping it to 100. But I am definitely interested in exploring my options with my character and seeing where I can take it and what I can do with it and how to make it more unique, because right now I'm kind of in a little bit of a creative block with who I am, and I'm going in and I am me and I'm as energetic as I am, and I do all stuff in the ring and I can cut amazing promos, but I just need something else, something a little different, and I'm working on it. I work on it every day. I think about it all the time. When I'm sitting at my desk, I think about it. And then when I'm at training, I'm thinking about my other job. It's a whole, yeah, my brain is definitely like.
You're an overload. She's overload. She's taking down notes. She's at meetings and she's doodling, like, okay, this is what I want to wear.
This is what my hair design is going to look like.
This is going to be
how I want to do my signature.
This is my promo. This is going to be my saying, you know, my catchphrase. I saw your match for Women of Honor, and you had teamed up with Sumi Sakai, and it was a tag match, and you got a lot of praise by the announcers, and it seems like, you know, you are, you know, some people, it takes a while to get it, and you get it. So now you were talking about you going on the excursion to Japan, and just talk about your experiences in Japan and just, you know, how quickly you think you've grasped this compared to other people.
I don't know how I did that. I still have a lot more to learn. I think people give me a lot of credit sometimes. I'm just like, sure.
Yeah, Jeff, stop doing that.
I'm just going by what I saw here. And she did a heck of a job in the match that I saw. I'm going to heap the praise and, you know, say what, you know.
Gabby's very humble. You could tell in her voice. She's very humble.
She's like, stop it. I'm not that good. But yeah, I am. Talk about Japan and just, you know, just that whole thing and just exactly like some people, you know, it takes a while to develop, but you're actually maybe learning faster than others.
So Japan was really cool. It was an experience. A week before I left, I was a mess trying to figure out what I needed to get together. If I needed to learn a language, I was just trying to figure out what to expect. But you really can't plan for that. You kind of have to go and do it. And once I did it, it was amazing. I made friends with the girls that were there despite the language barrier. They're the foreigners like myself that were there became my, they're, I consider them like lifelong friends now. And it was, it got tough sometimes. I got really homesick for a good while of it, but I pushed it through and I had, I have more matches in Japan than I do out here in America so far. So I ended up making a decent fan base and out there, and it just worked out really well. It worked out much better than expected for me. I'm honestly, it's the most I've ever been proud of myself. When I came home, I was like, I did it. And I did really well.
Now, so you were homesick, right? You got homesick, right? So I can imagine it was like being 2 months in Japan. And I don't know if it could last a week. But have you gone to the infamous TGI Fridays that everyone goes to down there in Japan?
I did. I did go there after a drag show, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was good. It was good food. I had some guacamole and some quesadillas.
There you go. See,
it was awesome. I was in Japan eating Mexican food. I was satisfied.
You know,
satisfied.
Yeah, I know, right? You're like, oh, the TGI Fridays, great. I would just go over here. So she went to the famous TGI Fridays that we see on shows like Being the Elite and stuff like that. So that was awesome. So that's great. Like
that's the place to go in Japan right now.
Now listen, I saw you know, Chris Jericho and Cody Rhodes are talking about, like, when you're in with somebody and the language barrier is there, you have more of a chance to do a perfect match because you guys are kind of like, you can't communicate, so it just adds more, and it adds more to your learning ability. Do you think by far that this is going to help you out in the future?
Absolutely. The language barrier, definitely there, but there's like this universal language of wrestling that you can kind of figure things out while you're going. And I feel like now I can go anywhere, and any other professional wrestler that I meet, I could plan a match with them regardless of what language they speak. I think I could do it. I think any professional wrestler could do it if they wanted to. It is difficult, and it kind of like figure out what they mean and stuff like that, but you get through it, and really beautiful and amazing matches come out of it, and the story gets told. So that's what's most important. Even if it takes 3 hours to do it, which sometimes took 3 hours to do it, but that's okay.
No, yeah, of course. I mean, what I appreciate, Gabby, and thank you so much. We're speaking to Gabby Ortiz here. Is I love the fact that she's talking about telling a story in the ring, which I think a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, it's very easy as fans to nitpick and say, "Oh, this is a terrible match. It was a 1-star." You know, rating it how many stars you want to rate it. It's very easy for us to do it because we're not the ones doing the ring, but you could tell a great match when you're seeing the in-ring psychology. Going a little bit back now from your experience in Japan to Women of Honor, I mean, I've paid close attention to that, looked at, for example, people like
so much
Purrazzo,
talent, so much talent,
Mandy Leon, you know, and yourself included as well in that conversation. When do you think the enthusiasm will be from the crowd that they'll finally have a women's championship for Women of Honor?
I have no idea. That is something that we're always talking about. That's something that's always on our minds. It's needed. I mean, there's enough talent there. There's every girl that's on there can hold a championship, I think. Like the mainstay girls, Karen Q, Mandy, Kelly, and, you know, Stella, she's new, and myself. And I think it would be something that just catapults the division even further than it already is, because I 100% believe it's needed, and I feel like every other girl in the locker room completely agrees. And if I knew any better, I'm sure the office agrees as well. So I don't know what the holdup is. I'm not sure, but it needs to happen.
Yeah, you need to find out about that, Gabby. You need to get in front of office and say, what's going on here?
You need to get on them. Listen, look at all that talent right there.
Because we as fans can only, do so much for you, Gabby. You guys got to go in there. You guys are in the inner looping. You can talk to the management. We can. They'll probably look at us and like, get away from here, you stupid Mark, or something like that. So, but speaking of that real quick, when it comes to obviously there being a title, I mean, speaking now from a women's perspective, how exciting is it right now? Because Jeff and I talk about how right now is probably the best time to be not only a wrestling fan, but be a wrestler as well, with social media and the ability to brand yourself and get your name out there. I mean, how exciting right now is it for you to be female when women's wrestling seems to finally be getting the notoriety it deserves?
It's super cool. I think, like, I started at the absolute most perfect time. When I went to the tryout, it was just getting to a point where things were really changing. Now that I'm like in it, I'm having matches and getting booked places. I'm traveling. Perfect time. I mean, I meet so many awesome girls, and then I meet girls that were in business before all this happened. We just want to protect each other. We want to make sure that every one of us has a place. We look out for each other because there's still people out there that don't fully accept it or understand it or want that change. And we make sure that those people are told, you know, it's happened. You got to just be here for the ride. If you don't like it, just shut your mouth. You know, so yeah, we all look out for each other from what I've experienced.
Completely agree with you, Gabby. We're speaking to Gabby Ortiz here, guys. If you don't know who she is, you will eventually find out. You know, time will only tell on that one. But again, just speaking to Gabby, you can definitely tell you have a good head on your shoulders. In your mind, what keeps you so level-headed? Because you seem to have a great grasp at it. I mean, at 22 years old, you know, everybody thinks they kind of know it all.
It's a good support system, probably.
You have a good it seems like you have a good support system. But at the same time, you're very mature in terms that you admit you don't know it all. You know, sometimes people your age might think they do. So what keeps you so level-headed? Is it the support group system around you? Or is it just something that just comes natural to you?
I was raised very well. I was my father, who is my absolute best friend. I'm with him all the time. He's at all my shows, and my brother and my sister. My sister has three kids. He has like four jobs. My brother, he's an entrepreneur. I've always seen that my entire life. So taken that and I placed it in the aspect of professional wrestling. So I like to keep myself around really, really great individuals, and I'm happy I do that. And my mom is my like guiding force through it all, and she was the hardest worker I've ever known.
Yeah, definitely. She's looking down on you with a huge smile because, you know, obviously, like reading the article, she sacrificed a lot for you, and to see that you're doing what you love and you always have a smile on your face, obviously, you're making her proud. One final thing, Gabby, and thank you so much for your time. The woman's, like Brian was saying before, the woman's revolution, it's a great time to be in wrestling. If you could have your dream match tomorrow, this weekend, you have to go. You got to get your bag from your desk and go and face this one female wrestler. Who would it be?
Mickie James.
Mickie James?
I literally had a dream about wrestling her one day. Like, one night. I woke up, I was like, that would be so cool. So, Mickie James.
All right, so Gabby, thank you so much for joining us. What do you have coming up so that we can promote it?
My next show is October 21st. That's the one that's definitely happening.
Okay, Jersey All Pro. So we will definitely. Oh, and Rahway, right?
And then I have a couple of MFPW shows. We have so many shows I can barely keep up with the days. I apologize. They're all on the web.
No, awesome. It's on the web. Look it up, you lazy bastards, if you want to find what Gabby's doing.
You Google her.
Just Google her. Seriously, come on. But no, Gabby, we appreciate your time. Like I said, I think the sky's the limit for somebody like you. I think for me, at least, talking to you, you have a great head on your shoulders from what we can tell, have a great support system, and we can't wait to see what you do in the near future, and we can't wait to get a chance to see you in action live in the ring.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was a ton of fun. I really appreciate it.
And it gets you set up and went. So Gabby, so when you're in WWE or NXT and you got your promo skill set, you know what? One of the first podcasts that I did was those the Jersey Wrecking Crew, the High Spot podcast. You know what? I got to give them a little special thank you, a little shout out. So we expect that. All right, Gabby?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, right.
No, why not? That'd be cool.
All right, so keep in touch, and we definitely have to have you back on in the future.
Yep.
All right, and thanks go out to Gabby Ortiz. Hey, Brian, she's been at the Fridays in Japan that we all know and love, and maybe one day we'll visit you. But listen,
that's a landmark in Japan. It really is a huge landmark in Japan.
Yeah, I don't know how it could survive, you know, 2 months in Japan. I'm just a very homesick.
Just go to TGI Fridays. That's it.
I could live off the food, but I'm just such a homesick person. And then, you know, having to fly 13 hours to Japan, man, you know, there's some people that can do it, and she's definitely one. And, man, you can tell that she's got passion in her voice, and she seems so far ahead of where everyone else is at that young age. So
she's got a good head on her shoulders, Jeff. And to kind of sum up, I guess, what you were saying, too, and piggyback off your comments, is that, yeah, she has a great support system around her. And the thing is, how you and I talk about doing this show, and we love doing this show for you guys, and you guys are listening to the High Spot podcast for a reason because you enjoy it. It's a labor of love for her, too. She doesn't look at it as work. It's just her dream, and she's following it. And like I mentioned to her during the interview, I admire that a lot because it's very easy, Jeff, for you and we talked about this every day. Even when we're not doing the show, it's very easy to get up every morning and work for a paycheck. It's one thing to get up every morning, be excited that you're doing something you're passionate about. And when we do the show, I'm passionate about it. But, you know, for her, she's living her dream every day. So, like I said, so much admiration, but also a lot of inspiration for a lot of people as well.
And Gabby Ortiz, you can find her wrestling everywhere and anywhere because she is busy. And again,
yeah, look it up where she's working, the lazy bastards.
She will be there in October for Jersey All Pro Wrestling. I think it's going to be in the Rahway Recreation Center.
Yes, it is.
And I think we kind of know that place.
We know it
very well.
Yeah, we know a little bit. We've been around that area for a
while. So, you know, if you want to see her and you're in the East Coast, you're in Jersey and anywhere near Rahway, definitely go look her up. She is definitely the future of this business, especially for the women's division. And she could be a future player in, you know, the Latina division because she does have that it, and she definitely could represent.
Well, the great thing about this, Jeff, is that, you know, you don't want to take it for granted, but for somebody like Gabby, she has time in her hands. And the thing is, like she said, she's very focused. She has a good head on her shoulders. I think she knows the direction she wants to go in. It's just going to take time, but fortunately for her, at this point right now, it's best not to try to be in the limelight because now she has more of an ability to kind of learn and hone her craft, which, you know, to me, no doubt, she's going to do it very well.
So that was Gabby Ortiz, and we thank her so much for joining us here on the High Spot Podcast. Now, if I got to ask you a question, Brian, how do you think Vince McMahon took the idea that the Bullet Club was actually in the very parking lot in the arena that he was in there also when they were having Monday Night Raw? What do you think his reaction was?
I think his reaction was, look at those guys out
God
there.
Goddamn, pal.
They remind me of Jackie Gleason, those funny sons of bitches out there. Yeah, that was his reaction, basically.
Really? No, obviously he was kind of upset. So I don't know if...
He was upset?
Yeah, he was upset. He was actually upset that the Bullet Club was outside of the building.
You know what, karma's one thing, Jeff. You know, and you think for Vince, for what they did when the WWE invaded WCW, right? You would think it's more of paying homage. It's something like that. The mere fact that he got upset, I don't know how true that is, but if he did, I'm like, so wait, you can dish it out. You can serve it, but you can't take it yourself.
Do you love or hate what Bullet Club did?
I loved it. You know, to me, it was paying homage to DX and basically going out there and they're whining the name of Cody Rhodes and they're basically doing the same thing with WWE like WWE did with WCW. Did you buy your tickets here? No, I got mine for free type of thing. Because, again, everybody knows it's no big secret. As much as Vince, I feel, sometimes wants to live in this bubble that, you know, all this negativity stuff doesn't exist. Attendance hasn't been good for Raw or SmackDown Live. So
you've seen the pictures, dude.
You've seen the pictures. Social media, it's out there. You can't cover that up. And to ignore.
Yes, you can with tarp.
Yes, literally, you can cover it up. But you can't cover up the fact that the attendance has been down as of late. I can only imagine how house shows are doing. So to bring those things up, I don't think it's fair game. That's what this business is here. Do you think WWE's going to go bankrupt tomorrow or next week? No. But the Bullet Club is doing something that WWE did, and they're getting their name out there. And, like, why wouldn't you embrace it? I was thinking, Vince, you should have done the exact same. You should have done the thing that Eric Bischoff failed to do. You should have opened the doors and let Bullet Club come in the building.
Would have been great, man.
Would have been great. People would have watched Raw and be like, wow, I never expected this. I can't wait to watch it next week and see what happens. That would have been the smart thing to do.
I give credit to Bullet Club. I give credit to the guys and, you know, the Young Bucks, Marty Scurll, Cody, for getting themselves out there. And, of course, the whole thing, if you're watching the Elite, Adam Page finally was able to get away from the Stooge. And actually, if you look at the next episode, they kind of hint at who it was. They killed him, the WWE Stooge. I think what they're doing is great, and I gotta tell you, congratulations!
So many murders on that show.
Congratulations to Cody for defending his Ring of Honor World Championship at Death by Dishonor in Las Vegas last week. So, you know, that was a great pay-per-view, guys. We support the independents. We support Ring of Honor in Japan. Everything, WrestlePro, Pro Wrestling Magic.
We celebrate all wrestling promotions.
So that was a great matchup too, and I think what they're doing is awesome, man. And I think you should open the doors. There's some people though who are always under WWE
umbrella,
watch, but they look and they're like, well, no one would know Bullet Club if they came into the ring. No one would know if Marty Scurll came in the last segment and beat up Enzo. No one would know who they are. Agree or disagree?
I completely disagree. And for people that think that way, they're living under a rock. They really are. Because when you go watch NXT programming, which we talk about on NXT Weekly for the Fans Podcast, you go in the crowd audience. I mean, we were physically there, folks, when Sam Roberts was doing his WrestleMania pre-show, whatever, and we were standing there, and they pushed us aside because I had a Cody Rhodes Bullet Club shirt, Jeff had a Marty Scurll shirt,
Villain Club.
everybody had Bullet Club shirts, and those people were pushed aside because they outweighed more of the WWE audience in the crowd. So I don't know what more you could say. The proof's in the pudding. The proof's out there. You see it there visibly every single night when you watch WWE programming. You see Bullet Club shirts. So for anybody to say nobody would know who they are, they're living under a rock.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, a little girl might not realize who Bullet Club is, but, you know, there's a bunch of people there that are definitely going to know who they are.
And we've seen kids with Bullet Club shirts. I'm sure they don't know the history of Bullet Club, but they think, oh, wow, that's cool. I want to see it. It's all part of the business, man.
It definitely is, and nobody markets themselves more than the Bullet Club. I mean, they're everywhere. You have the Elite Series. You have their shirts everywhere in Hot Topic. They're the perfect example of the guys who either want to leave WWE or who are scared of they'll never make it to WWE to realize, oh, and I'm getting...
No, I'm waiting for you to finish. I'm saying, and listen, I'm not a fool to say that, you know, like promotions like New Japan and Ring of Honor are so much more recognized than World Wrestling Entertainment. It's such a global platform. But like we've spoken about several weeks and we always talk about during the show, social media now is such a powerful tool that with the global platform and juggernaut, which is WWE, you can get the same equivalency of publicity just by going to social media because people follow it now. It's not like back in the days when ECW was just a Philly promotion in the Eastern Territory. Everybody knows New Japan.
It
is worldwide.
It is global.
So is Ring of Honor. So is all these other promotions out there. So for people to think that it doesn't have the same stature as something like WWE, I think it's kind of selling other people short.
Yeah. And to talk about the sad state of affairs of SmackDown right now, let me just say that the only bright spot right now, and this is a show that has AJ Styles and Nakamura and Bobby Roode in it, that Kevin Owens, it's his show. It's the Kevin Owens show right now, and it seems like he's the only one that's saving it. And it's really hard to fathom that when you have wrestlers like that's the only thing going on right now that you could possibly watch. Yes, Charlotte Flair is actually coming back, and she's actually wrestling again, so hopefully in the next few weeks it changes. But as they go to Hell in a Cell, I mean, besides Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens and inside of Hell in a Cell, is there anything you're looking forward to SmackDown recently? And I mean, it's just been, like I said, a sad state of affairs. And also the WWE Championship, I try to get on board with it. I was give Jinder a chance, or don't hinder Jinder, right? But man, it has just been like a shit show, a crap show of what's going on that show. And I don't want to, you know, criticize, but wow, it's just...
Of course you do. That's what we're doing.
Head scratching.
We're criticizing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm criticizing
this. In all fairness, though, we're criticizing things that we've noticed that it's not working. And the whole Jinder experiment, in my opinion, was exciting. It was brand new. I had high hopes for it when Jinder Mahal would talk on Talking Smack when that got canceled eventually. I think once that got canceled, I think you kind of lost the ability of relating to Jinder Mahal a little bit, because now he comes and plays the classic heel card of race, and you know that's something we're very, very well known right now in this day and age about race and discrimination. It touches a chord that everybody's just kind of sick and tired of it. It's juvenile. It doesn't go anywhere, and it doesn't set anything up, because obviously it's the heels trying to get heat. You're waiting for the babyface to come back and get retribution. But at this point, you're not giving Shinsuke. Now, he did have retribution because he attacked, you know, the Singh brothers and attacked Jinder, but it didn't come up. And it was done a week too late, in my opinion.
And to use racism in here, it's more like high school sophomoric jokes that are just don't make sense. And
well, that's Vince McMahon, damn it. He loves that
anytime
sophomoric
you
stuff.
Can... You know, whenever there's issues between Caucasians or, you know, of you know, white and African Americans, you cringe. But the fact that you're doing it with Indian, Punjabi, and Japanese, it's just weird. It's weird with the racism between races that aren't white and African American. It's just weird. It's just crazy. It's just why they would even go there.
Ultimately, not even to talk about race or anything like that, Jeff. To me, it just doesn't serve a point. And I know the direction they're going in, but it just doesn't go anywhere.
Nobody's 1986.
Nobody's committed to it. Nobody cares about it. Nobody's interested in it. And that's why you're getting the result you have here. So if Jinder does end up losing the title and Shinsuke wins it, it would, again, be another staple in Shinsuke Nakamura's lackluster rise to the main roster, because...
And that's a whole podcast
like this,
right there.
Moments like that could be really important, really exciting, and pinnacle moments in WWE history have kind of been washed away just because the setup. For example, I give you a great gourmet dinner, but I put it on top of a trash can. It doesn't look good. The presentation isn't good.
Very nice.
So that's the way I use it.
Well said, Kimosabi. And I don't know why I called you Kimosabi, because it's kind of racist. Sorry about that.
Slap you in the face for that comment.
But listen, you're talking about a show. Oh, there I go. I did it. You didn't. Oh, there you go. Tap on the wrist. We're doing stuff, and we're doing a lot of great stuff ahead. We're almost nearing 100 episodes, Bri. We are right there on the cusp of 100. So we got a lot of stuff planned that we're going to keep top secret. But one thing we're doing is the guests are going to be bigger and better, as they always are. Yeah. And I think that's something. It's not like a game show host. The prizes are going to be bigger and better, but you know they are as we head into 100. Very important milestone for the show. I can't believe we almost have done 100 of these, which is crazy.
Can't believe I almost lasted 100 with you.
I know. And, you know, the honeymoon is still a honeymoon. There is no bloom off this rose. But, and you're shaking your head, and hopefully we'll go on video one day, and we'll be able to see you, your beautiful face.
It will happen. I don't know about my beautiful face, but it will happen.
So, we'll on video. A bunch of stuff planned up. Next week is going to be a busy week because we have a special show on Wednesday for you guys. Wednesday, we will have the High Spot Podcast. We will have Shane Strickland, who has an I would say the biggest match of his life, because MLW presents One Shot from Orlando, Florida on October the 5th, and he is going to take on Ricochet. These are two of the best of friends who are going one-on-one, and this is the one time only where Court Bauer, who runs MLW, is going to do like a one-night-only thing, get the gang back together. So you're going to have Ricochet and Shane Strickland, and we're going to talk to Shane Strickland on the eve of his important match with Ricochet. He's obviously said it is the most important fight of his life, you know, especially career-wise. So it's going to be great to hear from Shane Strickland. Both of them are great wrestlers, so it's going to be a kind of tug of the heart who's going to win, but we're going to hear from Shane as he prepares for that matchup. And as well, we have Miranda Salinas joining us. She of the Mae Young Classic and of Reality of Wrestling. So she will join us too on Friday. So you're going to have a double your pleasure shows next week on the High Spot Podcast.
Of course, we do everything for the fans, and here, you know, best two out of three here in the sense that we're producing content out faster than we can actually sustain it. So it's exciting, the fact that we get a chance to kind of do a little bit of late breaking news and just excitement and anticipation before a big fight, which is going to be Strickland and Ricochet.
Oh, I'm excited for it. I cannot wait to see it. I cannot wait to stream that. Of course, you know, you want to catch on MLW.TV. They're amazing little mini-series that they have on. Two more chapters left on that as they head to Orlando, Florida for their battle, the most important one of Shane Strickland's career, as he says so himself. So we'll talk about that and his career and his future. You've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. You've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Also, follow, subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, leave a 5-star because, you know, God damn it, we deserve it. And also, listen to us on the B Plus Player Radio Network. Thank you so much, Mark Adam Haggerty. Good to be part of the family. So many great shows like Destruction 101, the Wrestling IQ 101, and the brand new one, A Drink with Gina, which I just listened to and it is hilarious. Just, you know, amazing stuff done by the B Plus Radio Network. Also, follow us on our website, highspotpodcast.com, as well as our Instagram and Snapchat. And, dude, I need a drink of water. Trendsetter, it's been awesome. Until next week.
It's great doing it, man.
A very busy week. Anything, any final thoughts here for the High Spot Podcast listeners?
We thank you so much for listening. Jeff and I couldn't be more excited to do these shows for you every week out. You can get two for the price of one, folks, so you're welcome on that end. Like I said, for the Jersey Wrecking Crew, Jeff Martin, my tag team partner, I am the trendsetter, Brian Berger. Thank you so much for listening to the High Spot Podcast. Until we catch you guys next week, life is just going to be
too sweet.